The failing writers would like to apologise for the sudden and unavoidable change to our schedule. Unfortunately, Tom, Dave and John are unable to join us this week. So instead, I'll be balancing various marine life, fish, bivalves and the like on my nose. See how many I can get on there and see if I can break the world record for the largest collection of aquatic life simultaneously poised on a person's snout. Oh, they're here. Damn. Oh, well, I suppose we should do the show then.
So, this week we are going to talk about previous writings.
Yes.
Things what we've written in the past and never discussed, probably mostly because we're too embarrassed
to. Well, yes, well, more of that to come.
But that's always good content. But before we get there,
yeah,
let's talk about what we've been writing. How's NaNoWriMo going? You smashing through your targets?
Well, see, here's the thing. This is what I wanted to say, is that the weird thing is, this time last year, I'd just finished the first draft of the Spooky War book.
Yep.
And I'd put that down and got straight into writing something else for NaNoWriMo. Yep. Rhymo. And I wrote like 50-odd thousand words of that.
That's right.
And it was the most productive that I've ever been, was approximately 12 months ago now.
Does it feel like a year ago, Dave?
No, it really doesn't. Well, in some ways, it feels like a million years ago. But like since then, I've barely written anything. And, yeah, part of it is because I had to get a job and that takes up a lot of time. Mm. And as we all know, there's other stuff going on. It's not been the best of year for most people. But, yeah, I suppose I wanted to put on record that I'm very grateful to you chaps for sort of carrying me through this year, this season. I haven't put as much into it as I sort of wanted.
I'm going to edit this bit out, you soppy bastard.
Which is a roundabout way of saying I haven't written anything this week. I only seem to have the time to think about Poker Night.
Well, as we've discussed before, that's writing. That's partly writing.
Well, that is part of it. I like running a critical eye over things. I can sort of do, but I sort of reach the point where
yep,
I feel
that
like
shit.
Yeah, that's all I'm kind of saying is don't like that bit. Don't like that bit. But I haven't got time to actually like put any new bits in
to actually delete it.
Yeah. So, yes. No. Nothing. I haven't written anything. On to you, John.
Obviously Tom will be approaching the, what we on, it's like the 10th tomorrow, so you'll be approaching like the 15,000 word mark.
It's a bit cheeky of you to even start this as a topic after last year, John, where we actually did start.
Oh, yeah.
And you just went, I'm just going to do it in January.
I was voicing a audiobook that was, I think, 17,000 words long. Not 17,000, that's quite easy. That's a really short book. It was 170,000 word book.
Harder, yeah.
I didn't really have a lot of spare time, to be fair, in November. I hilariously still thought that I'd be able to bang out, you know, 1,000 words a day, but it didn't quite happen, funnily enough. Yeah. Anyway, Tom, so what have you been writing?
Very, very little. I've had a teeniest tiny tweak into Poker Night. Just because I seen you having, you changed something that I didn't want you to change, so I changed it back.
When was that?
Just about an hour ago.
Oh, right. Okay.
Because I know you've been in it today. And
I have. I've been messing about today. I didn't see you in there. I thought I was sort of half expecting you to see you in there.
Oh, well, I saw you in there and then I was going to come in, but I was too angry, so I couldn't. I thought I'd just change it.
So you've just been watching me delete
your stuff.
I've
just been waiting for you to leave. So I could just pop it back in. So. But no, I haven't really this week. No, it's not been a good week for writing. Has to be said.
Well, I think that kind of brings us nicely and neatly to what I suppose is the big news of this episode, isn't it?
Yeah, is that, it probably does.
Yeah, we have, because of our continual failures to actually write anything, we're not just failing writers, we're failing to write at the moment.
Yeah.
And we have this project we want to do. So I think what we've decided to do, isn't it, is to say, right, let's make this the thrilling season finale so that we can then spend a bit of time on Poker Night and come back with a special episode where we actually do the pitch in a few weeks' time.
Yeah.
I think that sounds good to me. I think if we let it drag on to the next series.
Well, the trouble is you have to put in so much effort and energy into the podcast. It just detracts. We can't do both, can we? We've tried. And we
no,
do
it's true. It's that old paradox, isn't it? Is how are we going to improve our writing if we don't actually get round to doing any writing because of the podcast we do about improving our writing? Yeah.
The trouble is, and the listeners will probably rightly disagree about this, but the quality and the content and the amount of effort we put into the podcast is something that we're not really willing to, we can't drop. There's just the thing is, you can't, because it's going out there and people are listening.
And let's face it, it couldn't get any lower, could it? So,
no.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it literally can't drop.
I don't know.
There's only one bar of the fire on. And
no, but I think what I mean is, so it's always the writing that suffers, isn't it? It's always the poker night that gets put to the back and ends up becoming, because we've got to get this done first and what have you.
So
I think we owe it to ourselves to just have the little... give ourselves some breathing space and focus and actually not fail at the first bit of something.
That would be good.
And we'd maybe just fail a little bit further down the line.
Fail at the end, yeah.
But that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
But it also builds the tension, doesn't it? It helps the tension. Sometimes it's what you don't say that's more important than what you say.
The white space, isn't it?
The white space.
And we get to call it a special, so people are going to be like, wow, this is going to be good.
Yeah. So, and that's when rating figures will go through the roof. Mm-hmm. And
But yes, we basically need a better balance, don't we, between our writing and the podcast, if we're ever actually going to get stuff written.
Which is great, because that's a product of the success of the podcast for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 We didn't have that problem when we started it 18 months ago, whatever, 2 years.
Years ago.
But anyway, enough about our half excuses and rearrangements. We do have a duty to perform some kind of podcast that should probably be some kind of half decent one to go out on, really.
Yeah. So, past things we've done in the past. And one of those things.
Everything I have done has been in the past. Up to this point in life, everything I've done has been in the past.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we ask the question to each other, what stuff can you dig up from the dark and distant past? I think you sent an emoji of I can't remember what you said now. You basically went, no, don't have anything. Or what does that mean? Does that mean you literally... there just isn't anything?
Pretty much,
or you can't find it? Yeah. It hasn't survived?
I always think that's the interesting thing about us starting this podcast, that we all got into it for the very same reasons, but for different reasons at the same time. So kind of my reason was that I knew I had writing in me and I knew I wanted to write, but I just never really got round to it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It wasn't that I'd been churning out stuff and couldn't find my place or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I just hadn't.
Just
that
hadn't
was my,
got going
that was
with
my,
it.
Yeah, that was my failing. Do you mean you can have all the talent in the world or no talent in the world? You don't get to find out until you actually put pen to paper.
That's where I was kind of falling down.
Yeah. So there's a very odd thing. Every now there's a little sporadic first chapter of a novel. Doesn't know where to go with it. Stops. I can think of one maybe short story I wrote years ago that we can maybe mention. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Whereas...
So you're saying outside of the 1994 or whatever it was, co-op anthology.
I did tell you I peaked.
Poetry.
Yeah, we did. Do you know what I mean? That was a... I mean, so much success so young, it just kind of generally changes you. It really changes.
It's really true, isn't it? Happens to child. Child stars all the time.
Yeah.
Well, so what have you brought to the party then, John?
Well, do you know what? I was thinking I've never even discussed with you my first book.
Well, let's change that here and now. And
probably partly because I don't really like talking about it.
Is that because it's embarrassingly good?
Oh, yes, Tom.
Just to feel like
that is exactly what it is.
Yeah. Very intimidating for other people to.
Yeah, I don't want to upset
you. You are a very nice
listeners,
man. So.
Yeah, no, I think I don't even like thinking about it in a way. So that's probably why we've never talked about it. And I've never brought
so
it up.
So you thought you'd get us to think about it instead.
Yeah. But right. I thought maybe I should talk about that first book that I wrote and kind of
I think you should
put it out there. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just talk about the concept of it, the sort of basic story of it.
Well, go on then. Don't just talk about talking about it. Talk about it. We're here. Let's do it now.
Do you know what made me think of this as well? Is the
was that our episode on bad writing?
No, it wasn't actually. it was the episode we did on Stream of Consciousness.
Ah, yes.
Suddenly made me remember a little bit of the book that I remembered really enjoying writing. And it was basically a bit where the main character's pissed.
Right, okay.
And he's...
So you're trying to inhabit his mind, that kind of drunken...
That's it. He was sort of, yeah, he's dancing with this woman and he's off his face. And it made me think of that bit. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I enjoyed writing that bit. Maybe it's all right. And I read it back. It was like, yeah, it's not bad. And then I started reading from the beginning. And then I remembered what I didn't like about it. But I think there's something in the story. I'll give you the concept.
Well, again, that's something we've learned, though, isn't it? That virtually every writer that's been on has said nothing's wasted.
Yeah, nothing is wasted.
Even the stuff you think is, at some point, it's going to pop back up. And be,
that's what I like to think about this novel. Yeah. So it's called Lies Like Cancer. And the concept of the novel, it's about a journalist who lives with his 8-year-old daughter and his... wife has died, and basically his life has sort of spiraled downwards since her death into depression and losing his job and getting into massive debt and not coping very well.
It's a comedy, is it?
It's a comedy. So it's quite a dark beginning. Mm. I can see it going straight to the bestsellers list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not a very good role model and his health is kind of getting worse. And he gets these weird heart arrhythmia, and his hearing's getting worse too. So it's quite dark. But he's trying to hold it all together.
He's not got much going for him, has he?
No, not yet.
So far.
It does get more comical, hopefully. But anyway, it's sort of dark comedy. But one day, his daughter stays over at a friend's, and he gets a call in the morning from the friend's mom saying, just to add to his woes, your daughter's not feeling very well.
Oh, my God.
So he rushes round and he picks up his daughter. Meanwhile, slightly becoming enamoured of the girl's mom, who's a very attractive Scottish lady, seems very attentive, even though she's married. And he takes his daughter to the doctor's, and the doctor wants to do a blood test. And the results come back, and it turns out she's anemic, right? But a few days later, he's... at this point, he's trying to kind of turn his life around. He's trying to get on top of the mortgage arrears. And he finds himself jogging past this woman's house, this very nice house. You know, he's very lonely. And he finds himself knocking at the door just to see if she's in. And she answers, invites him in. And the husband's out at work. And they chat and have a good laugh. And they're talking about horoscopes and how stupid they are. And then they get onto their kids and his daughter. And then she asks him, what's her star sign? And he answers, Cancer.
Ah, right.
And then before he knows what's going on, this woman that he's kind of beginning to fantasize about is rushing across the kitchen and has thrown herself into his arms and is kind of stroking him. And he's confused and he's like, oh, my God. And he's thinking, well, maybe she's, oh, my God, maybe she's in love with me. God, I hope she's in love with me. And then... she's, looking up at him and she's got tears in her eyes and he's trying to work out what's going on. And it's been like a full minute now of her kind of wrapped around him. And he's like, trying to think of all these reasons what's going on. Maybe her husband's had an affair and she needs comforting. And then he suddenly realizes that she didn't ask him what's her star sign.
Oh.
She actually said, in quite a strong Scottish accent, what's her test say? What's a star sign? What's a test say? Or something. But his hearing is a bit shit, right?
I love to think about 3 months of John rewriting this because the answer, the girl was actually a Sagittarius. And he just couldn't get it. There's something about the story that just wasn't sticking together. Why would she cuddle him if he said Sagittarius? No, it's not working.
But it's an honest mistake, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's gone on too long now.
What I really love is trying to work out like the beginning of like where ideas came from. It's really fascinating, and I love the fact that perhaps you started out thinking about what if someone got cancer the star sign mixed up with cancer the disease, and then you went back and added in oh, she'd have to be Scottish.
Just have a really thick Scottish accent. Or just probably doing loads of accents. Like trying to be Jamaican.
That is exactly what I did. Well, he'd have to be a bit deaf.
Exactly. Then you oh my God, he's deaf.
He'd have to be losing his hearing because otherwise he's, you know. Yeah, no, that is exactly it.
Perfect.
It's the whole thing rests upon this slightly absurd idea that he gets that thing wrong.
Yes.
But I thought what's interesting about it, I mean, actually, the idea actually came from a real life a story from the news. But yeah, if I carry on, you'll sort of get where it's going. Anyway, so he enjoys this moment a little bit too much, right? This very long hug, and he's sort of playing the whole thing through his head, and he's thinking, well, if I explain it now, it's going to seem a little bit weird.
Yeah,
you know, that he's kind of been in this situation for so long. So he quickly just makes an excuse and leaves because he thinks, well, I can't say what I thought I heard. I can't explain it. And so he just bails, basically. And goes, right, well, the next time I see her, I will explain it all. But the next time he tries to tell her, her sympathy for him and just like the level of attention that he's getting makes it really hard for him to explain it. Plus, he's realized that everyone else is treating him slightly differently.
Yeah.
Like he's suddenly kind of the center of attention in the playground when all the mums come over to talk to him He realizes that this woman she's told everyone that his daughter has cancer. And his daughter was kind of getting bullied, but now she's kind of in this little group and all these good things are starting to happen.
Yes.
And he sort of tells himself he hasn't actually lied. He's just misunderstood. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of becomes a kind of philosophical novel in a way about...
Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? Once you go so far down a path...
Can you be entirely in the wrong in these situations?
Exactly, you've just got to keep going.
The lies to cover up the lies get bigger.
That's it. And so, it does, it gets bigger and bigger. And there comes a point where he's being asked, obviously, open questions about his daughter. So before, he's just kind of omitted the truth. And it gets more awkward. But it also, all of this stuff seems to be bringing this little town where he lives together. And people generally seem happier because they've got a purpose. And there's this big charity street party and everyone's having a great time. That's when he drinks too much. So the big philosophical question is, if something makes people objectively happier, isn't that a good thing? So it's sort of Kantian ethics versus utilitarian ethics in a nutshell. But the story gets more complex because it involves him eventually investigating like a local political scandal too. So then it becomes about judgment and, you know, his own sort of cognitive bias.
So what? So he's investigating another potential liar?
Exactly.
Ah.
Yeah. Potentially... much worse political, you know, making a lot of money out of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sort of it's about that. But, yeah, it's sort of about our ability to kid ourselves that we're not doing anything wrong, you know, even when we clearly are.
Quite wrong.
You know, and that other people's misdemeanors are always worse than ours.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a really interesting concept and storyline, John.
I mean, it hinges on a bit of a stupid thing, but
a lot of things do though, don't they? There has to be something in there somewhere.
Sort of makes sense.
So you must have really messed up on the writing to make that not. Do you mean? Because that's quite good.
Yeah, no, I think I have. Yeah.
No, but it's good. You know, one of those ideas where you start trying to think, and as if you were reading it, you start thinking, what's he going to do? Is he going to pretend that she's magically cured? Is he going to sacrifice her because he's giving the attention and give her cancer somehow or something, or do you mean, or shave her hair off? Or
yeah, well, he does. That was the story in the paper that a woman, she started shaving her kid's head, and she told her kid that she had cancer as well. So the kid thought that she had cancer, and she started getting loads of like charity money and stuff because this was in the States. So obviously needed lots of healthcare.
Yeah. When was this then, John? When were you writing this?
Oh man, probably. I probably started it about 10 years ago, probably finished it maybe, I don't know, probably took me about 3 years probably to write it. So I probably finished it about 7 years ago.
This wasn't the one that you did as part of your library group.
No.
Wasn't that one? No.
No, that was a different one. That was a different shit novel.
With the weak protagonist.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a different one.
Wasn't it? That was the one where, the passive protagonist.
Well, it's still, I'm with Tom. I think it sounds like a good
idea. It's got ITV four-part drama written all over that.
Yeah. Isn't it? Or is it got ITV four-part drama or an ITV four
ITV drama? One part on ITV4.
Just to double check.
It
sounds good. I'd read it. Tom probably wouldn't.
You couldn't pay me to read that, Dave. No. But I'm sure a lot of people would.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's one of those books that it's really important to do the sort of save the cat thing.
Yeah.
Because you have to get why he would ever be in the situation where he's just going to run away from just works himself up into this kind of situation.
He needs to struggle with it, doesn't he? He can't just be done maliciously.
Exactly.
Sympathise with him, haven't
you? And you have to get what his desperation is.
And the fact is, because he's a bit of a nice guy, it doesn't just end. He's a bit, I don't know what to do. Oh, my God, it's ballooning out of control. It's because he's, No, it's a good... have you got that to hand, then? Are you going to read us the first page or something? Get us into it.
I don't actually have it to hand. Sorry.
I expect a full report on my desk.
It definitely needs a rewrite. There's some stuff in it. I think the biggest issues are the fact that it's a hard beginning for the book because you've got to set up his desperation.
Yeah.
And it's not a great deal of fun to read. Although I tried to make it kind of funny. But...
I can really see that moment though. I imagine that would have been nice to write. As he's having that hug and thinking, oh God, this is wonderful. And then the sudden realization of, oh shit, sure, she doesn't mean that, does she? And that, oh, do I carry on this? Oh God, what?
Yeah,
do I...
maybe it's one of these where that's an answer in the edit to start it somewhere
start it there and work back
and build the rather than having this big front-ended setup.
Yeah,
I think that might be true.
Well, do it, because there's quite a lot of NaNoWriMo there. Jump on it. Strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah, I've not got many other things to write, so yeah, why not?
Yeah,
crack on.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it's got something. It just, what were the other issues I was going to make? Oh, there's loads. Let's not go into them. There's loads. Yeah, the fact that it hinges on this slightly...
problematic. Yeah, but... You can get away with that, can't you?
It's a MacGuffin kind of makes it.
Everything's got to have that, really. There's a million things, and you watch good stuff on TV or you read books, and there's a bit where everything changes round, and it's as if they wouldn't do that. They just phone someone, But I mean, there's even stuff based on true stories where you think, that wouldn't have happened, and you think that actually did happen.
Yeah, that's totally believable.
And you do
the
thing I think as well. You do mishear people sometimes, in quite a comical way.
I do it all the time. I give the wrong answer to a question all the time because I haven't really been listening.
Yeah, I was in the pub the other day, and the music was mental loud, and a friend of mine. Was sort of shouting over the music, asking me what my son's doing for his A-levels. And Katie shouted, he's doing media studies. And he went, oh, that sounds great. What sort of things do they do? And Katie said, yeah, he's making a pop video at the moment. And my friend's wife just looked utterly, shocked. And I went, what? Making a pop video? And she went, oh, I thought you said making a porn video. What? What has happened to schools?
What do they teach our children?
But yeah, it does happen. People do mishear each other.
It does happen.
And the consequences of that.
Maybe you should, when you rewrite it, you should have a scene after that where he does the same thing happens with someone else, but a slightly different thing. So, maybe he thinks he's saying cancel. So someone's asking whether they want something delivered or not. And then that person hears cancel. And she... So line them up, get four or five of them.
Yeah.
So there's multiple people in the village that have all had this completely different misunderstandings with it, because he is deaf as well, isn't he?
He is deaf,
so he's got harder hearing and stuff.
He works for the council.
And then put him in a loud pub.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, brilliant. Well, I definitely, you should revisit that, John.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what was the point in you telling us about that, John?
I don't know, really. Just that it felt weird that we're doing this podcast and I'd never even mentioned it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because it doesn't sound as bad as you said it did at the start.
I mean, maybe that's the reason I needed someone to go, sounds okay. Maybe revisit.
Did you lost any confidence in that turning point, in that it was a bit silly, or
I think so. I think the whole thing, to be honest, just the way it's written, I just wouldn't write like that.
John, I did think, it made me think, and I don't know if it's just because this is where my mind's at the minute, was it would condense down into a really sharp short story.
Yeah.
Like short flash kind of story.
Oh, is he very short?
Pretty, I think so, yeah, relatively short, certainly. In a simplified way about that.
Yeah, in a much simpler anyway, form, possibly.
Might be me thinking, oh, that's a good idea. What's the easiest way to get it onto paper?
What's the fewest number of words?
What's the quickest way of getting
that done? Yeah, we'll just write it as a poem. Yeah, it didn't even have to rhyme.
No.
Cool, next! Yeah, very interesting that, though, John. Interesting.
It is. Well, so off the back of that, John... Mm. You were talking about...
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about something you wrote a while ago,
So,
Dave.
This is the thing, you see, because you made me think about this thing that I had written a long time ago. And I suddenly realised, actually, I'd almost forgotten that I actually wrote a book 20-odd years ago. And I've found it. I found it, and it's... Look, listen to this. You know everything I have is on paper. 47,208 words. In this book.
Good man.
That's almost like a proper book.
Am I right in thinking that was a screenplay originally?
Yes. So what happened was...
I was going to say that's the version I read.
Oh, did you? No, I think you read the book.
Did I?
Oh, anyway. Oh, okay. I can't remember. Well, so what it was, so when I was at school, all I ever really wanted to do was to have my own show on TV. It's not much to ask, is it? I thought I wanted to be like a sort of famous...
Time yet, Dave, the time yet.
Well, I just wanted to be like Russ Abbott and Bobby Davro and
you might have missed the window, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was always writing little sketches and stuff. And I had these friends, Ian and Paul, who used to make little videos. This is like in the early, mid-90s. Because Paul's dad had a habit of going to the local auction rooms in the Tabernacle and buying... what they labelled as box of contents. So he would just bid on a box without knowing what was in it. And it always had like electrical cable and bits of broken toaster and stuff.
Like storage wars, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah, basically that, yeah, but for a fiver. And one of the things he got was an old sort of black and white CCTV camera, which, being a bit of an engineer, he hooked up to a Betamax recorder and made a completely unportable camcorder. Because camcorders were like all the rage at that time. So, yeah, Paul and Ian used to make these little films, black and white films, no sound, because there was no microphone with this thing. And I just thought, I'd like to do something like that, but I want it to be a bit sort of like a bit bigger and jazzier. So years later, I thought, you know what? I'm going to write us a script and we can make it. And all we ever used to do, really, was, because there was not much to do in Wotton, we would go to the pub and get drunk. And because Paul's parents were like the most relaxed parents, we'd usually end up back there. So I thought, right, I want to kind of write something that's sort of about us that we could film in Paul's house. That would seem to be the easiest thing. And I started writing this stuff. And we were watching lots of like Evil Dead and those Peter Jackson movies like Brain Dead and Bad Taste, like comedy horror sort of things. So we had to have zombies in it. So I thought, I'll write a zombie movie that we can film at Paul's house. And I don't really know where the idea came from, but it was that the sort of zombification, instead of being some unknown virus, came from a parasite, which sort of took over the host and made you eat whatever was near. That's why people were eating each other. But the only thing that could like kill the parasite was alcohol.
That's right.
So the premise of it was, we all woke up at Paul's house the night after a big bender, and the whole rest of the town had turned into zombies, and we were the only ones who weren't. And we slowly worked out that it's because we had alcohol in our blood. So we then had to keep drinking.
Remain pissed.
To remain drunk at all times so that we didn't succumb to being zombies. And it was great. And then we'd have like a bit of a party. And then eventually we'd run out of booze. So we'd have to go into the town to get to the off license. And then we'd get surrounded by zombies. So we filled up super soakers with vodka and made beer can grenades. And it turned out that we could turn out that the inhabitants of Wotton could be turned back into humans just through the power of alcohol. That was the kind of the story. And then sort of years went by, and then I went off to uni, and we all sort of went different ways. And it became quite clear that we were never going to make this film. because there were helicopters in it and car chases, and it's like, this, we can't do this with a...
You started out in your house and ended up...
We cannot use a black and white CCTV camera hooked up to a beard.
So that would be the great thing, wouldn't it? If you manage to start a helicopter and stuff, but then you're filming it on a CCTV camera hooked up to a Betamax.
Yeah, and the cable's not long enough to get it out the window. So I was like, right, well, we can't make this film, so... I'll adapt it into a book. I'd never tried writing a book before, and I'd almost forgotten that I had. And I think that's what you read, John, because I seem to remember you giving me some notes on it, and I haven't looked at it since. And this is like 20 years ago. So I was going to look through it to see if it was any good today, and then I thought, wouldn't it be more fun if we explored it together?
Right.
So
definitely.
There are, in this book, let me see, there are 230 pages. So let's play Pick That Page. So pick a number between 1 and 230, John, and I will read that page and we'll see exactly what my writing was like 20 years ago.
Well, I'd be an idiot not to say number one.
Oh, God. Number one. Oh, bloody hell. I wrote a prologue.
Does the prologue count?
No, that doesn't count.
Get into it.
I don't think...
Unless it's hilarious. Okay, here we go,
chapter one. No, it's really not. Right, chapter one. The Marshall Eagle is a big bird. Not like an 8-foot-tall, yellow-beaked, Camp American children's entertainment kind of big bird, but a proper big bird. In fact, it's one of the world's largest birds of prey. If you want to know how big they are, just have a look at the sort of food they eat, primarily monkeys. Not field mice or little bits of mince dangled from a leather glove, but big, live monkeys. They're not normally migratory birds. Then again, if I lived in tropical Africa, I wouldn't be too bothered about holidays either. But this particular summer was not what you'd call normal. It had grown cold, unnaturally cold for the time of year, and the Marshall Eagles were falling ill. Watching a person sneeze is quite funny. Watching a dog sneeze is hilarious, but watching an eagle sneeze? Now that's a sight to behold. Huge, majestic birds sneezing so violently they literally fall from the skies would positively bring the house down at the Royal Variety Performance and could be a long-term replacement for the, let's face it, ageing Brucey. I haven't really got into the story very much there, have I, in that first
page? I don't know. I feel like you're skirting around this. I feel like, I can see where it's going.
Yeah.
There was a lot of bird flu around in the 90s, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I think that must have been what I was thinking. I think it must have come from an eagle. Anyway, that was page one.
Can I pick one?
Yeah, go for it, Tom.
Page 28. I was going to say page two, but you'll probably still be talking about birds.
So I think it probably will be.
I've gone for one where you might be finished with the eagle.
Page 28. Hang on. There we go. Oh, yes, I changed Paul's name to Pablo.
Bit of exotic, yeah, that makes it,
for some
reason. That adds a lot.
Yeah.
Always good with the names, aren't you?
Oh, do you know what? Actually, Tom, look at this. This fits really nicely with what I was saying just now. So, Pablo's dad had made many modifications to the family home, but this was surely the most impressive. Many people scoffed at the way he bought seemingly useless electrical objects by the box load at auction, especially when tripping over said boxes in the porch, but here was evidence of its usefulness. By combining the garbage destroyer's motor with that of a small lawnmower and a basic knowledge of nuclear fission, the part hippie, part technical genius had created a machine powerful enough to grind any substance known to man. Pablo's mum found this particularly useful for disposing of other electrical items before they too could be used to modify the home. Satisfied with its progress and unable to cope with the noise any longer, Gordon powered down the mighty machine. He turned back to the food and carried the four plates to the table, setting them in front of the starving masses to much approval. Salivating greatly, Pablo picked up a veggie sausage and took a large bite. As he chewed, his face curled slightly at the, what you might call, interesting flavour. "Did you burn these?" he inquired. "No," came the guilty reply. "They taste a bit sort of burny." "Oh, well." Pablo ignored the ashen flavour and continued to munch away. The four set at the food with astonishing vigour. It's amazing what a heavy night's drinking can do for the appetite. And that night's drinking had been particularly heavy. God, I still haven't got into anything, have I?
Page 28. You probably Jesus, were talking about them birds, weren't you? To like page 25.
Yeah, I think I probably.
But I like you've set up the garbage disposal unit for later. I like
that. Yes, exactly. That's nice. Does get used as
We need to get to the zombies. What do you reckon? When do you reckon you brought them in? 50? Should you go 50?
Go on. Pick some up a bit later.
I was thinking mid 60s, 70s.
I want to see them approach for the first time.
Page 63.
First mention of zombie.
Yeah. What's up with Harry? Said Gordon once more, his face as white as the knuckles on his door handle gripping hand. I think he's gone a little bit funny. Suddenly the door was banging open and closed with a violent vigour. Gordon was being thrown back and forth like a rag doll. As had been noted throughout their history as friends, Gordon and Harry's pulling techniques were very unevenly matched. None more so than right at this moment. The door was starting to open further and further with every yank. Harry's strength was frightening, and he was easily overpowering the bigger man. It wouldn't be long until the battle was won, and it wouldn't be Gordon doing a lap of honour. "For Christ's sake, someone help me!" he screamed. "Why don't you just let him in?" Jack simply didn't see the problem. "Brains!" came Harry's reply. "Want to eat your brains!" All at once, the picture was well and truly got. Jack and Jim flew to Gordon's aid, but even with all three of them pulling as hard as they could, Harry was opening the door even further. His free hand was now flailing through the gap, trying desperately to grab an arm or any other tasty, fleshy appendage that might have been available. Jack grabbed hold of the metal hook on the door and tried to pull it towards the eyelet on the frame. It was only a flimsy lock, but if he could get it secured, they'd have a better chance of engaging the bolt at the top of the door. Harry, however, was just too strong. Jack looked over his shoulder at Pablo, who was still sitting at the table looking petrified. "Bloody hell, Pablo, do something!" he shouted. And Pablo did do something. He picked up his can and drained the contents in a single gulp. "Do something else!" His courage buoyed in the Dutch manner, Pablo needed no further encouragement as he stood and raced around the table. He picked up the mop from the wall and, through the ever-increasing gap in the door, shoved its moist, floppy, wine-soaked head into Harry's face. Harry let out a scream unlike anything the lads had ever heard. It was deafening. It was ear-piercing. It was bloodthirsty. It was bloody horrible. His grip released, the door slammed closed. Then it opened slightly and Jim removed his flattened fingers. Closing it again, Jack applied the aforementioned locks. Gordon grabbed the table and dragged it in front of the door. Jim pointed out that the door opening outwards and that the table served no purpose whatsoever. Gordon accidentally flicked Jim's now purple fingers and another scream rent the air, though this one was a little more girly. The exhausted friends listened intently at the door, but nothing could be heard from Harry. Though panting like dogs, jabbering like idiots and shaking like washing machines, they were safe. For now.
Good.
There we go. There's a bit of zombie in there.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about the idea that alcohol is the sort of savior of the day.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. And I called it, I quite like the title, I called it The Only Way to Live. Because, you know, it's like living the high life, drinking lots is actually the only way to live.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. It's quite clever. So, anyway, I haven't read that in 20 years. And I think as you pointed out, John, the problem was it seemed like a decent idea. And as I got some notes from you, I made some notes on there, was going to rewrite it. And then Shaun of the Dead came out. And I thought, well, what's the bloody point now? What's the point?
Interestingly, it seems less of a problem now with time going by since that. Because obviously it is a different idea.
Yes. 20 years
old. It's just that Shaun of the Dead did that sort of just like normal lads.
Yes.
Doing their own thing, bringing the sort of zombies to just like working class Britain.
Yeah, going to the pub
was a new thing.
Was the solution, you know, down the Winchester.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But maybe now, 20 years on,
yeah, I think
maybe now's the time.
Yeah, I think enough time has passed. I think it's new enough. Yeah. You know, it's different enough, isn't it?
I think if I just cut the birds out.
The birds.
I don't think it really needs the Marshall Eagle thing at the start there.
Change the reference to Bruce Forsyth.
Yeah.
I mean, some stuff that won't
needs updating a little bit, doesn't it? But
Solid, it's good, Dave. It's good.
The thing is, I'd forgotten that it's massive, this. It's 230 pages. I'd forgotten I'd written so many.
You see, you've practically done it, mate. I mean, you should totally finish it.
Yeah, that's like another... Well, I did, because at the very this last page, it says the end. So I definitely finished it.
What I love about it, Dave, is it sounds like you if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it couldn't really be anyone else.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's actually, as ridiculous as that sounds, it's quite a hard thing to pull off.
It's easier for Dave, isn't it?
To sound like yourself.
It's easier for me to sound like me.
Do you know what I mean? To have quite a distinctive voice.
I suppose so, yeah. There's some little bits, I'd forgotten that bit. Like putting a table against the door and then realising the door opens the other way. I'll keep that. So there we go. That is a little glimpse into my past and John's past. What's in your past, Tom?
Well, I've actually, because I was getting a bit bored listening to you read that while you were doing that, I ducked out and managed to find something that I had done. I don't know why this rang a bell. It was for a Radio 4 competition of some description.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what the brief was, but it might have been the zombie thing and the linking it to pandemics and thinking about it that brought it back to me. Because I wrote something called The End of Humanity as We Know It, which is about, and I wrote this in maybe 2007, maybe?
Right.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 15 years ago. And it's a story about a global pandemic.
What?
And the effect it has on people and how their behaviour changes.
No.
So there's this brother and sister that are around the mum and dad's for Sunday lunch. Everything's normal, boring. And then there's a dramatic news flash about basically saying that this is starting to happen. And, you know, in this one, it's a crop-destroying thing rather than a human killing.
Oh, I see, right.
So it kind of kills humans by default and is like world-ending. Mm. Do you know what I mean? It's just like literally going to stop everything. But, yeah, it's quite interesting, a little scan through how in it talks about how different people react to it. So the mum's reaction to it while they're all sat there sweating and thinking this is terrible. She's basically saying, well, that's not very good, is it? We just booked a holiday to Cyprus. and then talking about like looting and stuff and things. So I guess it's like maybe a parallel with the toilet paper thing and kind of the discontent there. But then people realise it and that's pointless. And it kind of comes round that actually people start pulling together. So maybe it's, you know, the clapping for the NHS or whatever, or people doing
banging pots. Did they start banging pots, Tom?
I don't think anyone banged pots in it. It's not that prescient, but yeah. But it ends up that we're back in the scene of the Sunday lunch, exactly the same as it was before. Obviously, it's had a harrowing effect on the world as a whole, but people are coming out of it. But actually, because people are pulling together rather than being separate, they've got used to pulling together. Mm. It might not be that bad, actually. There is enough food to go around if we just share. And then they're in this lounge with people from their street that they otherwise never met. Mm. So there is something, you know, and that happened in COVID, didn't it? Where people were literally living next door to you that you didn't really know. And so it's just quite interesting that it was
That's nice. So what was that, like a one-part thing or a radio play?
Yeah, 2,000-word short
story. It was a short story, not a radio thing. Okay.
Yeah, like a short story. But they didn't like it, so I stopped writing for a bit. You know what I mean? That's what I do.
So are you saying you got feedback?
No, I didn't, so I stopped writing.
All right.
I just gave up.
I think if you'd ended it with they were all the members of the local community were sat in the living room, and because there were no crops, they were eating someone from the next community.
That
would have been...
But they didn't know they were. It was just a mishearing. Then it would have worked, wouldn't it? It needed that. Who's Campbell? Campbell. Oh, you said Campbell.
Yeah.
You said cannibal.
Yeah.
No, it actually ends quite nice as they sat, no one feeling the need to stare into the distance beyond the TV screen where once the man on the news had announced that this was the end of humanity as we know it. Mm-hmm. He was right, though. Because it had changed for the better.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Radio 4 didn't like it, so whatever.
What do they know? Lost a lot of listeners recently, haven't they? So
well, you know what you're saying about stuff. You know, you can always go back and that's unusable now.
Yeah.
It like everyone be like, well, of course you're saying that because everyone knows what happened in the pandemic. Mm. And that's that. That needed it was the wrong. I was too soon, ahead of my time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That needed to be released. Like, do you mean just in the right little bit? Oh my God! Look at this.
Genius.
There
was a small. Perhaps it's true that we are all geniuses, but only for a very short window.
And everyone's a genius, but you've got to find the right time.
Yeah. If only you'd remembered to pull that out of a drawer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Right at the beginning of the pandemic, just quickly made a few little changes. Yeah. Bish bash bosh.
Who knows? But
too late now.
There we go. So we've all got a little bit of writing in the cupboards, haven't we? Yeah. A bit of cupboard writing.
Yeah. So that's all. So all of that writing, that's just. That's just been prep. It's been prep
work.
Well,
that's the thing. We, as we said earlier on, nothing is wasted. It's all experience, isn't it? It's all ideas. It's all training. So what's next?
Yeah.
Is the question.
That is a very good question. We were talking about what we'd been writing. I've had a dip into murder mystery.
Oh, have you?
This week.
Oh.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because I realised that we first wrote those first pages of murder mystery in June last year.
Bloody hell.
And so I think I wrote most of my 40,000 words. Maybe it was in January, actually. I think it was. I think I did Jan Rimo, didn't I? Or Feb. Or,
yeah.
I can't really remember. But I've forgotten so much about it. And I was reading it back, but it was all right. It wasn't terrible. I was kind of enjoying reading it. But that's got to be good,
yeah.
Right?
I'm fearful of reading what I did last NaNoWriMo.
But it's quite nice when you forget. I mean, that's what they say, isn't it, about putting it in a drawer and forgetting about it for 3 months. It's because actually when you come back to it, you genuinely have got a slightly more objective view on it. And
you're a little bit fresher on it, aren't you? Even if you... And there's bits you literally forget, don't you?
Yeah, totally.
You read them and go, oh, that's quite good.
But it was quite encouraging because it wasn't sort of as pedestrian as I thought it was going to be. It was actually okay. I'm not saying it was great or anything, but it was okay.
It's still a first draft.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah.
To be fair.
Get to the
so
end.
I'm going to persevere with that. That's sort of given me a little bit of a slap on the bum.
Yeah. We do know what we're doing after all.
Just doing it very, very slowly.
Yeah. Well, I think, weren't we also going to discuss, I mean, I know it is in the past, because everything is in the past, as you rightly said, Tom, but something in the more recent past was your surrealist story.
Oh, yeah. Let's have a cheeky little 20-second break and we'll come back to that and then give people a chance to just shake themselves off from hearing our old stuff. And
good point.
There once was a lovely podcast whose presenters remained quite steadfast that one day they'd write something not shite. And we'd all shout, at last!
And welcome back. See, everyone feels a little bit better now, doesn't it? It's like primary school when you had one of those cool teachers that would make you like, right, class, everyone up, do some stretches, do some dancing, and like kind of get you all...
Shake it out. Shake those fingers.
Yeah. Shake the fingers. If everyone's shook out, we can... I don't know what you want to... What do you want to... I suppose we should let people hear it first if they've got the patience.
We should. Hey Tom, before you do it, is this are you allowed to do this yet?
Yeah. No, it's finished.
Because we don't want to ruin your chances.
It's olden and dusted.
Is it? It's finished. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I did get honourable mention.
Did you?
You kept that quiet, Tom.
Well, you know, it's not
very good, just, Tommy. When did you hear that?
They sent a thing out and they sent an email out. Saying they had over 1,000 entries and then a link through to the winners page, which said the winners, the finalists, and then a bunch of people that were honourable mentions.
Oh, mate.
Well done.
That's good.
So that was probably the top 10% of the story. So
that's brilliant.
It was quite good considering it was, I mean, I said to you guys on the pod, I think, that it was a bit of a leap into, I didn't really know what I was doing with it, with a surrealist tag.
Mm. Well, yeah, but
I'm not sure I would have known where to start, to be honest.
But well, interestingly, I took a bit of inspiration from my own story. Do you remember the one I did for one of the short challenges about the last moments where he'd had two lives?
And
he
had
I did that mythical.
Oh, yeah.
And just riffing on the idea of the your last moments, your life flashing before your eyes again.
Yeah, yeah. The little nostalgic moments.
So kind of using that as the surrealist thing for it. So this. The idea of this one is that the guy's on his deathbed and kind of literally taking his last breaths, and in between these breaths he's getting this flood of surreal mixed up life thrown back at him.
Let's hear it, Tommy.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the highly commended story.
Well, it's all of it, Dave. So
let's hear all.
Sorry to disappoint.
Dave obviously doesn't want to hear all
story.
Of it.
Yeah, don't
I was building it up to give it a name, but I don't know what it's called.
It's called A Playground, A Pudding and An Ambulance. They feel leaden. Every time my eyelids kiss together, lasts a lifetime. Blink. The smell of jigsawed memories. The Maillard reaction twisted in smoke and thick grass and warm sun. A hand held gently under my elbow, guiding me to sit as if I were a piece of serially fixed kintsugi, ready to finally crack beyond all repair. Which I am. a table heavy with colours and overflowing plates and full dishes, the names of which I once could instantly conjure, but no longer can, without much more effort than the unnamed things deserve. Remember when Grandma would shout at you for doing tricks with the food on the barbecue, Grandad? Now, I want to, but can't. Flipping them in the air, like a chef in a showy noodle bar, she always said. She got mad every time he dropped a sausage. But I can almost remember that I once could. The echo of the impression that memory left is there, and I bathe briefly in that surrogate feeling of those days. I can remember they were happy and that there's something missing now. A deep hole that can't be filled. But I'm bloody sure I never lost a sausage. You'll have to teach Dad how. He's not got your flair. I look over, and it hits me like a face full of playground, that my Michael suddenly looks like an old man as he holds my hand in bed with both of his. Blink. The same place, same table, same smells, but younger. The sausages are in flight. And they were right, she looks pissed off, but the kind of pissed off where the smile that plays around the corner of the mouth tells you your balance is still well in credit. I recognise her now. She's my everything, before the whole. I remember our wedding day, my second, her first. The honeymoon in Singapore. The noodles. Who would have thought that someone like me would have found love twice in their life? The second perhaps less potent and untamed, but so much more solid and true. I had the overwhelming feeling of wanting to break open the hourglass and eat the sands. I felt with some certainty that time only moves at such a rate because we insist on observing it so tightly. But know now that without such observation, it's gone even quicker. I suddenly become aware that she's not there to hold my hand. And that bottomless hole nearly swallows me. Blink. Early retirement wasn't my choice, of course, but I would have known it was the right one if I could have seen my future then. But as I stand there, the end of my index and ring finger of my right hand focused on the soft passing greys of my left cotton shirt cuff and the cold roundness of my cufflink, I don't even try to focus on the words flowing all too easy from my Shakespearean Brutus stood to my right. Words of praise so hollow that they echo as they land on the uninterested ears. I'm just another brick taken out the wall and tossed silently into the skip. Et tu, my boss's boss? No different than the gorillas, really. Our forest grown from steel, concrete, glass and those rough, hard-wearing, nothing-coloured office carpet tiles. But it is the eternal nature for the young to challenge the old and take control of the group, using the bodies of the corporate collateral damage as steps towards the top of the tower. Survival of the shittest! As my old boss would say. He always had a phrase, saying, truism, proverb, or simile to hand. God rest his soul. Fatal heart attack on the 17th green. Metaphorical to the very end. I'd learned to hate that job which had given and stolen so much in almost equal measure. Blind to the damage it was doing, it was an addiction. At last, maybe, I had been forced to take my fill of the curative medicine, an intervention. And I left with a cheap clock. Vouchers for a plastic pasta restaurant, and the love of my life. The story of how I met her, Sarah, my second wife, barely needs to be told. It rolls from cliché to cliché without diversion into the original or unexpected. But I wouldn't change a thing. She was my soulmate, if you're stupid enough to believe that such things exist. Blink. The night air was a thick, invisible soup. The noodles were hot. I could feel their heat penetrating my sweat-patterned shirt as they landed on me. The performing chef rushing round to us to try and rectify his error. The other diners, not knowing if this was part of the culinary show, shuffling back on their stools and bracing like the front row of a stand-up comedy gig. I would have taken a dump truck full of noodles to see Sarah laugh like that, though. And every time I told the story after, I would always end by saying, "We got a free pudding, though," which I'm pleased to say wasn't thrown at us. She always wanted to go to Singapore. Her father was stationed there in the war. Or at least that's what he'd told her. There were no photos. She never knew the truth. And neither did I. But others did. None of that mattered. It was my favourite honeymoon. The soft, sweet, unctuous apology sparked my mind with my mother's hand on my shoulder as my spoon would slide beneath to cream, carefully scoop every custard layer of yielding delight jelly. Out the glass, rum-soaked sponge, with the schlup-pop clup of a Wellington booted foot being saved from boggy mud. Blink. The end of my first marriage came quickly, like the inevitability of a runaway truck down the hill. Sure, at first you could mistake it for an exciting ride, but soon you start to smell the caustic anguish of the vanishing brakes and realise you'll never make the corner up ahead. And so I guess you almost subconsciously stop even trying to steer. Then you're saddled with your own version of the trolley problem. Do you pull the lever? Who do you hurt? Who do you protect? I made my choice. And either way, it was the end of the road. As my new boss said, you can lead a horse to water, but if it's already been drinking at a different pool, you're a bit fucked. He kind of had a way with words. And I found comfort in the kindness of my new secretary, Sarah. I hardly got to see Michael as it was, but she was still a good mum. And I, of all people, knew how important that was. Well, the sad truth was that I didn't know. I imagined it was. I had to imagine because the sheep ate my mother just after my 6th birthday, leaving me with a handful of memories, a playground, a pudding, and an ambulance. One thing I could do for little Michael was make sure he wanted for nothing. Christmas became a challenge to see how much I could physically carry from the toy shops on Oxford Street. Birthdays the same, unless I was away with work. I guess I hoped he'd understand that. His grip on my hand told me that eventually he did. Blink. The exotic sounds of the bazaar melted into a Moorish cacophony, the clink of earthenware jugs being carried past with little regard for the path we were trying to take. This place was a flowing, ebbing sea, the tide rushing in with the promise of hand-to-hand mercantile combat. You had to barter. You couldn't just say yes to the price. That was an insult, they said. But to offer 3 goats and a cow for my beautiful new wife, apparently that was okay. 10 years later, I would have snapped the hand off, I reckon. But for now, she was fresh and ripe like a mango I dared to hold in my hand, not anticipating how that would be taken as a commitment to buy. Our honeymoon might have been the happiest we'd ever be together. We thought it was just the start, but it was probably the peak. I fell face first into a custard spiced with cinnamon, textured with rice, filled out with unctuous milk, like the risen cream you'd only ever get to taste if you were up before the blue tits. Newer memories crashed sideways into old, like galaxies colliding, neither knowing which bits came from where. There was my mother, at the small, hard formica kitchen table. Me, in short, sat waiting with my stomach at the front of the queue, in the middle of a small, dusty bar somewhere in the north of Africa. It was dizzying. I was okay, though. That's what I told my wife. I'm okay, I'd say. She hadn't asked. It had been a long time since her fragrance danced around me, and I felt her hand in mine. I hadn't missed it, but I was glad to feel it now. Blink. Much of youth is spent wishing to be older. Age is the key that unlocks the freedom of the world. That's what the secure bubble of a good childhood would lead any right-thinking child to conclude. But of course, you're simply too young to understand. Actually, the true freedom is having the wisdom of age and the bulletproof safety net of real love. I learned that again in 40 years, just in time. Just over a decade since I lost my mother. I thought it was the sheep people that ate her when I was younger. I don't know why or how or what that really meant, but I remember thinking it and not understanding what I'd done wrong to deserve it. Of course, my father had tried to be a good mum, but it was almost as if his whole generation wouldn't really let him. Blink. The sickly fog of spent petrol hung in the air from the ambulance reversed up close to the house. We never used the front door. I don't know when it last had been opened. People always just used to come around the side to the kitchen door. I didn't understand why they were so stern with me in their reassurance that it would all be okay. Surely, if it was going to be okay, they would be less fraught. Even my 6-year-old brain could work that out. I clung to the cold green steel of my favourite toy car, the plastic windscreen etched with the cloudiness of hours of thrilling crashes and chases. The coolness of it as I rested it on my lips, and how the tiny wheel gave in to the manipulation of my tongue. "Don't worry, it'll be okay," they said, the words all upside down and meaning the opposite. The sheep. I could see the sheep taking her. I remember the hot tears searing my cheeks. I wish I had more time, but the blackness grew quicker than any of us knew, and I think the sheep ate her. Blink. I could feel the smell of cut grass dancing through the summer sun, casting shallow and well-defined late afternoon shadows through the climbing frame and swings. The playground, down the road. Everything looked so tall and big, and in this vision, new and old, all at the same time. I knew if I'd been able to move my hand to check, I'd still be able to feel the dent in my forehead, from where the overconfidence and gravitational naivety of a five-year-old met the unforgiving playground gravel. My screams echoed by my loving mother's, my last true memory of how she really was. Before the sheep. Half a blink.
Ah, oh, you see, that's lovely, that, Tom.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. I really like the word pudding.
Pudding.
It's one of my favourite words. Pudding, yeah. Not just because of what it suggests, but because of just the way it sounds.
Falls out the mouth pudding. Nicely, doesn't
lovely
it?
Lovely word. Mm. But no, that's I enjoyed that, Tom, very
I
much.
I actually enjoyed writing it in the end. Mm. And I don't know if I said this before, but I think one of the little freedoms I enjoyed with it was being able to put stuff in there that you didn't have to justify or take further or
what do you mean?
Colour into.
Because it was so surreal, like there's a bit, you could just end
yeah, you just throw it in and go, and make of that what you bit. Want. I don't have to explain it.
yeah.
So the bit about them going to Singapore and her dad being in the army,
like
that but
bit.
That wasn't quite the truth. There's some weird mystery around there. The guy obviously knows himself, or do you mean, or doesn't, or and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Do you mean it just adds a layer of something and depth of life to it.
Yeah.
Rather than,
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Sometimes if you like, you know what you mean, or even if you don't know what you mean, you like it. So why not do it? It's like that line. Oh, what's that Beatles song? Is it Hey Jude? Where he says something about the movement you need is on your shoulder. And Paul only put line in because it was the only thing it rhymed. And John and Yoko went, yeah, I kind of know what you mean. Leave it in.
Yeah.
And it doesn't actually make sense in any way at all. But, you know, if it kind of feels like it works, why not?
Yeah. Well, the thing with the sheep taken by the sheep hater or whatever, is like a kid's thought, isn't it, that's not connected to anything, but then it doesn't quite make sense, but it sort of makes sense. You think people in white coats, maybe the kid thought they were sheep. There's enough there that you can draw some conclusions, but I, as the writer, there's not an answer.
Yeah,
it's another one of those things, isn't it, where you know your GCSE English teacher like, well, this is what they meant when they wrote this. No, the writer didn't even, it's just
lots of lovely little bits that connect to each other. I really liked that.
Yes, that was another really enjoyable game to play with writing it, actually.
Threads. There's lovely little lines like, I look over and it hits me like a face full of playground.
And that doesn't get revealed until the last.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's brilliant because it's surprising anyway when you first hear that line. But it also is setting up one of his key little memories from his past. It's very nice. So. But there's lots of those little connections all the way through. And brains work like that, don't they?
Yeah, you know? Especially when they're in the sort of surreal, half-dreaming...
Remembering and...
That kind of mixed-up subconscious, talking-to-conscious brain sort of thing. There's bits that just get kind of dreamlike mixed together, isn't it, really? It's just trying to find that dreamlike
mixed
stuff.
Mixed up like a pudding.
Yeah, like a pudding, very much so, very much so. Yeah. The bit I think I most enjoyed writing and reading once I'd written, there's a bit in it where he's doing it whilst... remembering in detail eating a trifle layer by layer.
Do you know, I was about to say, Tommy, guess which my favourite paragraph is.
Is it that paragraph? The trifle?
It's exactly that one. Just... The soft, sweet, unctuous apology sparks my mind with my mother's hand on my shoulder as my spoon would slide beneath to cream, carefully scoop every custard, layer of yielding delight, jelly, up out of the glass, rum-soaked sponge with the schlop, pop, clop, of a Wellington-booted foot being saved from boggy mud. Cue round of applause for Tommy.
I'm quite hungry now as well.
So it's so nice, that. It's just lovely. It could be almost like a bit too self-conscious, but it's not. It's just perfect because you completely get it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You're just there, just watching the spoon go in. It's brilliant, that.
I enjoyed that. I'm glad
it was
you
lovely.
It.
You know what it made me think of? It did make me think, going back to the stream of consciousness episode we did, it made me think of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it was very...
I think I borrowed a lot from that, actually.
You mean we've learnt things as we've gone along?
I think that,
literally. Yes, almost is that.
Learnt and applied them, and some might say with some level of success. Maybe it is time to end the season, actually. I think you're at this
end
point where
we...
Yeah, we've maybe peaked
haven't we?
To just escape.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I did a bit of digging into the history of surrealism, and the roots of the movement apparently are based in free writing, or what they call, I think they called it automatic writing. Mm. And it was a sort of backlash to rationalism around the sort of First World War, because the surrealists saw the rationalists as these very sort of bourgeois, you know, their values being very bourgeois and almost like the cause of the First World War. Mm. So surrealism was like the backlash to that, and it's got that. There was lots of sort of dream analysis in it, and so it works very well, that the stream of consciousness thing. And I like the way yours, it wasn't stuck in a particular tense. It was like it jumped around, didn't it? From, I think it started off present tense memories, and then it was like he had sort of these lucid moments where he's talking in the past tense,
as though he's actually
aware it's a memory, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then sometimes he's not even aware it's a memory. It's like almost like it's a confused hallucination that's happening right then. And I like that. It was all very mixed
up. Yeah, there's bits. It's kind of the difference between, there's bits where he's in control of what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then he's just not in, he's spinning out into it.
Yeah. Both my nanas had dementia, and they sometimes had moments where it was almost like they were sort of lost in a reverie. You know, that like they believed that something that happened a long time ago was happening to them then.
Right, yeah.
And then sometimes they would sort of pop out of it and they'd seem fine. Yeah. They'd seem quite lucid and were able to tell stories about the past. But it was almost like they could just sort of slip from one sort of conscious state into another. And it was a bit like that.
Well done. Highly commended, Tom.
Good work, Tommy.
Thank you.
Oh, excellent. Well, that is a high note, isn't it, for us to finish this self-indulgent episode upon, perhaps.
Yeah.
Hey. What we're all about.
So I guess we just need to say thank you to people for bothering to listen to us, and
thanks folks
for sticking along with us. We will be back.
This isn't the end, is it?
Not only with our Poker Night special finale, spectacular.
I think we need to come up with a better name for it than the Poker Night special, don't we?
Yep.
But yes, no,
which we're not going to do right now.
Not right now, but this isn't the end. This is just the beginning.
No, we'll be back. We'll be back fully in spring, won't we?
Yeah, we've got some big plans actually for next season. So we're going to change it up a little bit, but we'll reveal that at a later date. I think you've had enough shocks and excitement for one day, haven't you?
Oh, actually, is it?
Yeah, everyone needs to have a little shake out again, I think.
Is it?
Shake those fingers.
Isn't it usually like the end of sort of the second season-ish where someone dies, one of the regular cast members has to die.
Whoa.
And gets replaced.
It's fine, they're getting replaced, though, don't they?
Volunteering?
Well, I'm just saying.
Getting replaced by someone else. Don't they carry on?
But not mention it, yeah.
Yeah, we just carry on and not mention it.
Right. Okay.
Well, that happened in halfway through season one. Do you remember with John, Dave, and we just swapped him out?
Yeah, I think we pretty much got away with it, didn't we?
I don't think anyone noticed, really.
No.
We just found somebody else who was equally obsessed with trees and fingers.
There were a couple of tweets saying, I think that's the American John.
As we discovered earlier, there's enough John Rands to go around, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
We could have a different one every season.
The same, yeah. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to go away and actually write, aren't we? And
then that's the plan.
The next time you listen to us, we will have written something.
Yeah.
So, I suppose all we have to say is until then, dear listeners, thanks for sticking with us. And
we'll speak to you soon.
See you soon. Yeah.
Bye.
We're going to try and actually do some writing. The thought of which is slightly frightening.
It's not that we can't be asked, continuing with the podcast.
It's just that the whole point of this thing was so that we could hopefully bring some of our beautiful word babies into the world.
Squeeze us out some literary babies. Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?